있었네. 옴 파르타야 프라티보디탐 바가바타 나라야네나 스와얌 व्यासेन कृतितां पुराणमुना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीं अम्ब त्वाम् अनुसन्ततामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणी.
We're on verse 38, chapter 2. Okay.
Sukaduke same kritwa. Sukaduke same kritwa. La ba la pao jia jia. La ba la pao jia jia. Tato yudhaya yudjaswa. Tato yudhaya yudjaswa. Naivam papam avapsisi. Naivam papam avapsisi. Sukha dukhe same kritwa labha alabhau jaya ajayau tataha yuddhaya yujaswa na evam papam avapsyasi.
Shankara is now, for the time being, going to close the section on what we'll see to be called Sankhya Yoga. Sankhya means knowledge. So the Yoga Shastra, the part of the Bhagavad Gita dealing with Sankhya is dealing with the nature of the Atma, the nature of yourself is Brahman. And so that revelation, the recognition that I am Brahman, that's the Sankhya Yoga. The Karma Yoga has to do with understanding the proper attitudes that give you in karma, in doing action, while doing action, that will give you the antakarana shuddhi, it's purity of mind, the right state of mind, purity of mind. Antakarana means mind, shuddhi means purity. We have to see what antakarana shuddhi actually means, but for now we'll have this translation of purity of mind, and then we'll unpack that so we really understand what that means. So, Krishna spent the first several verses really unfolding the knowledge. Aham Brahmasmi, the nature of yourself. Then he had several verses answering Arjuna's questions about dharma, or about the transmigration of the jiva, about maintaining the dharma. Because these are all questions that Arjuna had brought up. So there's several verses dealing with that, looking at knowledge even from that perspective. Such verses as, you know, even if you consider yourself to be a jiva, right? Even on that level, if you consider yourself to be a transmigrating jiva, even on that level, there's no real reason for grief. Because on that level also, you can't change the reality of the way things are. And so if you're going to grieve for a reality that is that you can't alter, that grief is in vain. And so he spent several verses on that level also. So now what we're doing is moving. He's going to kind of sum up, though, go back to the Sankhya Yoga, sum that up, and move on to the Karma Yoga, so that you can understand what type of attitude you have to have toward, or an attitude that if you have toward the world, will bring about a relative equipoise in the mind that allows this knowledge to take place. That's when we talk about antakarana shuddhi, we're really talking about a mind that is available for knowledge. You know, it's not some exalted state, which I have that fear when we hear this word antakarana shuddhi, purity of mind that people think of an exalted yogic state that a person has to attain to. But when we're using the term antakarna shuddhi, it's in reference to the mind that is needed in order to be able to gain this knowledge. And so it's on a much more practical, down-to-earth, simple level, this particular, the understanding of antakarna shuddhi. It's simple like this. If this teaching is being unfolded, so you're with your teacher, and this knowledge is being unfolded, and your mind is very worried about this, that, and the other thing, so it can't focus, that mind isn't available for knowledge. So what are the attitudes that you can bring, that you can give your mind toward action, that and toward what you're doing in the world, that will allow the mind to have a natural abiding and equipoise, just relatively, so that it's available for knowledge. So here's some final words of this section from Krishna to Arjuna. Sukha dukhe same, these are accusative duals. Kritwa, right? Making pleasure and pain equal. We'll see what those means in a minute. Pleasure, sukha, and dukkha are sama. They're the same for you. Means my action is not about pleasure and pain. It's not that I, all of a sudden, pleasure, there isn't pleasure and pain isn't pain. It's not that they flatten out and become the same. It's that what is motivating me is not pleasure and it is not pain. Right? So pleasure and pain are not the criteria for why I do the action that I do. See, so that's quite different if you understand that. Labha alabha. Labha alabhau is also in the dual, dwandva. So it's in the accusative dual. Whether I gain something or I don't. Labha means to get something, to gain something. Alabha, I don't get it. Right? So the acquisition is something or not getting it. Labha alabhau. Jaya ajayau. I am victorious in this war, because now Krishna is directly talking to Arjuna about his situation. He's victorious, jaya, or ajaya, that negates, right? So jaya ajaya, jaya ajayau. Look, accusative dual. So becoming sama. Sama means the same. Toward these, right? Toward whether it's pleasurable or whether it's painful. Whether I get it or whether I don't get it. Attain it or I don't attain it. Whether I'm victorious or whether I'm not victorious. For me, it's the same. Means what? I am the same in terms of my response. Now, to be the same in terms of my response toward these opposites, right? Toward these opposites. That means what we call my drishti. The reason that I'm doing the action is not that. The reason I'm doing the action is not to have pleasure or pain. It's not to have an accomplishment or not to have an accomplishment. It's not to be victorious or it's not to be defeated. That isn't the motivation and that's not what I'm after. Right. So that's what he's saying in the first line. So having made these things the same, tataha then, having done that, yudhaya, right, dative singular, yujaswa, may you equip yourself, prepare yourself, endow yourself, get yourself ready, imperative. So may you get yourself ready for this war. May you prepare for this war. Prepare yourself to do it, to fight the war. Having taken on this attitude, na evam papam avapsisi, and in this manner, you won't attain any papa. Right? That's a future there, avapsyasi. Na avapsyasi. You won't gain papa, any type of sin. Evam, in this manner. If you approach your karma, if you approach the karma in this manner. Swamiji in his Bhasha talks about this a little bit in terms of for Arjuna and for the Pandavas, who in this Mahabharata really represent dharmis. That's the Pandavas, they're the white ones. They represent dharma, you know. White standing for purity. Duryodhana and his group represent a dharma. And so Arjuna is being taught by Krishna to engage in this war and to fight because it is his dharma. It's his duty. And that is why he's doing it. Right? He's not doing it because of hatred, as Krishna is teaching. Don't do this because you hate Duryodhana or you like so-and-so. It's not about your likes or dislikes. Don't do it because you want the kingdom. You want to have the kingdom and the riches of the kingdom, right? And the pleasures of the kingdom. Don't do it for that raga. In other words, don't find yourself driven by the reason behind what you're doing. Don't let the reason behind what you're doing be raga and dvesha. Raga means I want this so that I can be happy. Dvesha means I don't want this so that I can be happy. And this is normally the motivating factor in our actions. We go toward what will make us happy and we go away from what won't make us happy. That's what motivates us. As we are going, as the verses will unfold now, the Karma Yoga attitude is different than that. It's not that you don't do the action to be done. In fact, those are the actions that you engage in. Those things that are your responsibility. And your responsibility, the things that come before you to be done, you do those actions for the sake of fulfilling your dharma. And you do them with a particular attitude. Right? And so that attitude, as we'll see, brings about an equipoise of mind. And so here, now, what Krishna is saying to Arjuna, this war is your dharma, right? By doing this war, by engaging in this war, you as a kshatriya, you won't gain any papa at all. The reason you're doing the war is not for sukha or to avoid dukkha, right? It's not to gain the kingdom. It's not even to be victorious, that you want to be the victor over Duryodhana. You're doing this war because it's your duty. And when you're doing it because it's your duty, these likes and dislikes and these polar opposites are not something that are going to affect you. And you also are not going to be gaining any papa because you're doing what's expected of you in the situation, which is punya, not papa. So he says, get ready and fight. So having said that, he says, Eshante pihita sankhe, Eshante pihita sankhe, Buddhir yoge tvimam shrinu, Buddhir yoge tvimam shrinu, Buddhya yukto yaya partha, Buddhya yukto yaya partha, Karma bantam prahasyasi, Karma bantam prahasyasi. Esha te abhihita sankhye buddhihi yoge tu imam shrinu buddhya yuktaha yaya partha karma bantam prahasyasi. Esha buddhihi, feminine. This buddhi, this wisdom, in reference to Sankhya, right? This buddhi, this knowledge concerning Sankhya. I'll tell you about Sankhya in a minute. This buddhi, this knowledge concerning Sankhya, locative singular, which has been told, abhihita yukta, abhihita, which has been told te to you. So this knowledge concerning Sankhya, which has been told to you, okay, And that, or we'd say like this. This is the knowledge about Sankhya, which has been told to you. Sankhya is the jnanam, is the atma jnanam. Now, there's something interesting in this language here. This knowledge, this wisdom about Sankhya, which has been told, this is the knowledge about Sankhya, which has been told to you. Okay. Sankhya is the atma jnanam. The knowledge of atma and the atma are one and the same. This is kind of interesting. This is comment. Swamiji comments on this. It's in the Bhashya also. So now if you say, think of it like this. If I hold up a cup and I say cup, the word cup, I'm giving you knowledge. Cup, say, cup brings the vritti of the cup. Right? The actual physical cup is different. The physical cup here is different than the vritti of the cup. Right? And so what happens is then when your eyes fall upon the cup, somebody might say, this is a cup. The cup forms a thought modification in your mind, which then you are aware of. You see how that works? Mm-hmm. And that's true with any sense perception, because sense perception will give me something external, and then I gain a jnanavritti, a knowledge of it, in my mind, which I then illumine. It's called vritti vyapti and pala vyapti for some of you. If you know that or not. We discussed that a long, long time ago. Okay. Vritti vyapti and pala vyapti. Vritti vyapti means through the sense organ, my mind takes the shape, right, of that. That it pervades, vritti vyapti. The pala vyapti is the cognition then of that. They happen simultaneously, really. But the vritti is different than the awareness of the vritti, right? Whereas what about with atma jnanam? When the vritti vyapti takes place, means the teaching is taking place, the pramana is working, right? Mm-hmm. The pramana works, it's directing your mind toward the subject, the atma. You see that? So now, the subject, the atma, is the awareness which illumines the vritti. Now, if the vritti is of a cup, the awareness illumines the cup. There's a dvaita there, you see that? I mean, it's the pikas of mitya. Mm-hmm. But what if the vritti is of the atma? Then the vritti, the subject of the content of the vritti and the content of the one that illumines the vritti are one and the same. Mm-hmm. So Sankhya, mm-hmm. when we say this wisdom concerning Sankhya, this wisdom concerning the atma, or this wisdom concerning Brahman. So Brahman and the knowledge of Brahman are one and the same. Do you see how that is? Because for the mind to recognize, I am Brahman, the self that they're recognizing is Brahman. There is not a separate, there's not a subject-object duality there at all. So sometimes Sankhya is considered to be the Atma Jnanam, the knowledge of the Atma. It's also considered to be the Atma, or it's considered to be Brahman, Or the knowledge of Brahman. Because in either case, there's no dvaita there. This is why we say that when knowledge takes place, a person has what's called an akhanda akara vritti. Akhanda akara vritti means the vritti, the thought that the person's having, the vritti, thought modification, right, is akhanda. Its form, its akara, is akhanda. There's no subject-object differentiation there. Because the vritti is of the subject. Right? The vritti that takes place in the mind is of the subject. And the subject is the very being of the vritti. Right? The conscious being, say you have any vritti, whether you have a vritti of a pot, or of the painting, or of this room, you have that vritti. Right? The content of the vritti is the atma, but the vritti is of maya. It's of these names and forms that you're experiencing. Whereas in atma jnanam, the content of the vritti is not at all these names and forms that we're experiencing. The content of the vritti is the atma. Do you see what I'm saying? And so because of that, there's no subject-object differentiation. That's the akanda. It's not split. There's no dvaita. There's no duality there. And so as this teaching takes place, with those moments that you recognize yourself, if we were to slow everything down in slow motion and show you what is actually taking place in your mind at that time, instead of having a content that's based on sense perception, so you have all these nama rupas, all these names and forms, instead, the mind now, that its content is only the Atma. And the Atma is the truth of its content anyway. So that dvaita is gone. So here, he says, Esha te abhihita sankhye buddhi. Okay, everything I've been talking about, this is the wisdom concerning the Atma, which is Brahman. That's Sankhya, the Atma Jnanam, the recognition that I am Brahman, that I am the whole, that I am the changeless. So this, up to this point, it's all been about Jnanam. Then, Buddhi yoge to imam shrinu. But listen, shrinu, imperative. But now listen to this. Imam, feminine, accusative for buddhi, right? Now listen to this wisdom. Okay? So imam is going back to buddhi there. So now listen to this wisdom. Buddhya yuktaha yaya. Yuktaha, endowed with. Which buddhi, with which wisdom, yaya, with which, buddhya, endowed with which wisdom, he partha, he Arjuna, endowed with this wisdom, karma bandham prahasyasi, you will get rid of this bondage of karma. Through this karma yoga, through this wisdom I'm going to teach you now, you will, prahasyati means to destroy, get rid of, right? Karma bandha. Bandha means bondage. So the bandha, the bondage of karma. So now, it's a huge statement to make, really. And sometimes if the Bhagavad Gita can be very misunderstood, because if this verse is not understood properly in verses like this, then you think, oh, well, I can become liberated by karma yoga. So you have bhakti yoga and karma yoga and jnana yoga and even hatha yoga, you know. take your pick, you know. But this isn't the idea at all, okay? And we'll see as this unfolds. So you have to understand what's being said here. There are actually, even in earlier on, he says, there are two nishtas. One is karma yoga, one is sannyasa yoga. The one who takes the sannyasa means they take the orange. Their life is just simply committed to study, okay? And to shravana, manana, nididhyasana, to meditation. The whole life they've given up all of their karmas. They've given up their careers or their life in the world, right? And so all of the things that they used to do now are renounced. Now they take the robes, they take the orange, and they live a life of a contemplative life, where what you do is study and try to understand, try to gain this knowledge. That's it. The karma yogi has not yet taken sannyasa, but the karma yogi also is a mumukshu, also is seeking knowledge. The sannyasi, right, who's given up everything, is a mumukshu seeking knowledge, unless they're already have knowledge. So we're talking about those who are taking a lifestyle in order to gain knowledge. So we have the sannyasi and we have the karma yogi. Both are mumukshus. Both want knowledge, right? If they don't want knowledge, say the karma, if the person who's in the world doing karma does not want knowledge, there is samsari. This isn't applying to them. This is, if you want knowledge, you know, what type of mind is necessary to become an adhikari so that you can gain that knowledge? And later on, Krishna says, of these two paths, taking sannyasa, taking the robes and just living a renunciate life and studying, is that the better path? Or is the better path karma yoga? for gaining knowledge. Not for one who has knowledge, but for getting knowledge. Krishna says, karma yoga. And his reason, the reason for it, is that if you remove yourself from your life, right, if you remove yourself from all of those rubs, then you don't have this field that he calls later in the 13th chapter, the kshetra. You don't have this field of experience, you know, to torment you. to create a sadhana for you, you know. Because actually, if you think about it, when this knowledge takes, the knowledge is already a given. It's already a fact. The freedom of yourself is already accomplished. So, you're not going to gain moksha in that sense, as an accomplishment, right? That's why one book that Anand Rambachan wrote that I could even use it at school often, Accomplishing the Accomplished. Moksha is the accomplishing the accomplished. Praptasya praptihi, the accomplishment of the accomplished. And you're already liberated. The problem is one of ignorance. You don't know that. And because of that ignorance, there's all kinds of superimpositions and problems that have taken place. Yeah. And ways of behaving in the world, going after my happiness in the world, is brought about because of that beginningless ignorance. And unfortunately, since that ignorance is beginningless, we've been doing that for a long time. Right? We've been behaving toward the world and toward ourselves in a way that it is not, in the way that the world is not. We've been seeking happiness where happiness is not. We've been trying to become full through things that have no ability to give that to us. You know? But the world is designed in such a way as to trick us into believing it. It tricks us because every time you fulfill a desire, your mind is desireless for the moment. And when it's desireless, you know, like a very clear mirror or water reflecting the sun, your mind fills with an experience of happiness and joy. And then you look out at the object and say, thank you, I love you, you've made me happy. That's what it is. And it works every time. It works every time. That's why everybody's fooled by it. Because every time you fulfill a desire, your mind becomes quiet. And so, what you look at is the object, as though that's what has given you the happy experience. You don't know that really what has given you the happy experience is the quiet mind. It has nothing to do with the object. You don't require any object in the world. You don't require the world. You don't require anything to be happy. You don't require anything at all for the mind to have a sukha vritti, you know, a happy vritti. It's not given to us by the world. It's given to us by the quiet mind. In fact, that's why you've probably noticed if you're depressed or agitated or angry, some terrible thing is happen to you and you're all frustrated and angry, a situation that usually makes you very happy doesn't. Right? Because that situation that usually brings about, let's say, like a fulfilled desire situation, is not strong enough to remove the agitated vritti that you're suffering from. Right? So we all experience that. And at other times you experience, because your mind happens to be quiet for some reason, you know, I mean, maybe you had a good morning, and your mind is quiet. And then, whatever you're experiencing is taking place, that you had, there's just a whole different aura to your experience. It's because your mind is quiet. And in that quiet mind, just like the sun reflects nicely in the water, giving the water an experience. Right? If the sun is reflecting in the water, it is giving the water an experience. It's different than the experience of the sun. This is also important. But it gives, the sun gives the water an experience. The reflection The reflection also is different than the sun. When I fulfill a desire, that quiet mind, my being that illumines that quiet mind, gives that mind an experience. The me is not having any different experience. My self-experience is not changing at all. But the quiet mind has a different experience, and it's very enjoyable. It's what we call sukha, or happiness, or pleasure, or love, or bliss. All of these variants, depending upon just how quiet the mind is. And so we are universally fooled. An individual is fooled over and over and over and over and over again every time you fulfill a desire. And then it's backed up by the nightmare of not fulfilling your desire. When you fulfill a desire, you're happy, right? Thank you to the object. When you don't get the object, you're miserable. Thank you to the object, right? So it works on either way. When you don't fulfill the desire, what happens? Because you had believed that your happiness is dependent on that object, when you don't fulfill the desire, your mind gets tense. And the tenser it gets, the more miserable it becomes. And so if it's a really big desire, very important to you, that's denied you, it's going to be a very big tension. It's just a little desire that's denied you, then it's a little tension that you can flick off, oh well, so it doesn't matter. Right? And so this is your reality as an individual. And that individual reality, you know, you can multiply that 6 billion times. Right? Because it's the human experience. And so that's why this illusion is so powerful. Right? And because the illusion is so powerful and you have lifetime after lifetime beginning this, lifetimes, you know, strengthening this, when you recognize there's a problem here, there's no way, you become a mumukshu. When you become a mumukshu, you recognize this doesn't work. This trying to become whole and complete through the fulfillment of desires will never work. Because everything, every single part, every single cog in the wheel is moving and changing. So there's no possibility of getting any type of stable peace. It is an impossibility in this creation. Say you realize that. It's not possible. And then you come with that mumukshutvam. And Ishwara Anugraha, the grace of God, really, you come to that teaching. But now you come to the teaching with a mind that has lifetimes of commitment to becoming, you know, of ignorance. I need this to be happy. Right? Of going outside in order to find my well-being. Have lifetimes of it, and supported by everybody that we know, supported by the world. And so now, what attitude can I bring to my pursuits to help neutralize the reactions that this pursuit, let me have this to be happy, to neutralize those reactions? So that my mind can have a relative peace, so that I can discover the truth. Right? Now the thing is, you can't say, it's not realistic to say to your mind, okay, stop wanting things. You know, quit acting like that. Yeah, let's just stop. You know, like people who quit smoking, the best way to quit smoking is just to quit, and you just never have another cigarette, it's over. You quit, it's over. You know? So like that. Let's quit having desire. Let's quit. Let's quit.
Tonight.
Now. From this moment on, let's make a pledge. Let's make a pledge that from this moment on, right? We will not ask the universe in any way to make us happy. Whatever it does is fine. Can we make a pledge like that? That really is not realistic. Because the mind is layers and layers and layers of programming. I want this to be happy. There's also the very prarabdha karma that's driving you also. And so now what has to happen, and what that's so the brilliance of the Bhagavad Gita, is what Krishna will say, yeah, what you need to do is stay in your life, stay in your field of experience, and pursue your desires, but pursue them with this attitude. Pursue your life, engage in your life, but engage in it with this attitude, the attitude that he's going to be teaching. And this attitude is what he calls karma yoga. So here he says, if you engage in karma with this attitude that I'm going to teach you, the bondage of karma of your actions, you will be released from that by engaging with this. So even though it's a relative release, it's going to be a relative release, that relative release will give the peace of mind that allows the mind to gain this knowledge and enjoy this knowledge. And that karma yoga attitude, which at first is a practice, actually becomes natural. The karma yoga attitude for one who has knowledge is natural. Right? It's natural because you know who you are. Right? And your mind isn't seeking to become happy by the world. Because it knows. And so that mind just naturally is abiding in myself, and then I do what here is to be done. That's just a natural way of responding to the world. I do moment by moment by moment what is before me to be done. It's not that I don't enjoy myself or have fun or that we don't have... It's not that there's no pleasure. It's not that. It's just that, what do I do with the day? I do what's here to be done. Because I'm not trying to make the day make me happy. That's not in the mind. Because I'm already happy. So I'm not trying to make myself happy. Right? This is subtle because it's not saying that the jnani becomes like an automaton, you know, that doesn't, you know, respond, doesn't use the world to become happy, or it's something. It's not like that. It's not something abnormal like that. It's that you're happy and things are fine with you and with your life, and your life is full. Now that's another thing. Everybody's life is full. Completely full. It can't be more full. There's things all around you. You try to think of a time when there aren't things all around you. You are in the middle of this creation. Right? So you are totally, because you're a jiva, dropped in the middle of the creation, you are totally a part of your environment. And so you are full. You are completely engaged in your environment. And so now, if that's understood, and that your environment, that you and your environment, this is the prarabdha. This is you. This is the karma that's here right now. This is your sadhana. This is it. This is what it is. Right? So once Swamiji once told me, I was talking, I forget exactly what I was talking about, but it was relevant to this. He said, you know, I just do what's in front of me. What's there to be done, that's what I do. I do what's there to be done. Now, you know what? We all do that. We all do that, but the mind can just be going wild around it. Right? You're there in the environment. You're doing what is there to be done, or you're resisting you're struggling with what is to be done. Okay? Because there you are in the middle of it. The creation gives you that. It's dropped you right in the middle of it. So you're struggling with what is to be done, or you're simply doing with what is to be done. Okay, so now here's the thing. Say you're struggling with what is to be done. Why? Well, because this doesn't make me happy, right? If I could do this, I would be happy. But doing this, I am not happy. So this is that. Now this is exactly why Krishna says you stay in the field. You stay in the middle of your life, right? So that you can get to a place where the ananda that you seek is not missing. Right? The ananda that you seek, your mind recognizes as yourself. It stays relaxed because it's never away from your being. And never being away from your being, it is happy, and so it happily does what is to be done. And I don't mean happily in a goo-goo way. It's engaged in what is to be done, but it's not seeking to become happy because we're happy. Right? That's the now this is the thing. This is the slow transition that starts to that happens as a person matures. Initially, when you come to knowledge, you know, your mind doesn't have, probably, it could, but it probably doesn't have the relaxation, enough relaxation to be able to enjoy your own being. You know, it's so used to being engaged in the world in order to get a moment of relaxation. That's what it's in, that's how it's used to getting that type of shanti, right? From the world. And so it doesn't yet have enough experience of just being with yourself to where that's enough for it. And so if you try to tell that mind to not pursue what it believes it really wants, or even from the prarabdha that it wants, you're just creating pressure. Rather, you tell it with what attitude, go ahead and pursue, but pursue with this attitude. And that's going to be the karma yoga attitude. It has to do with really you pursue, but accept the results of your actions as prasadam from me, from the Lord. You pursue. And so there's a lot of different ways we'll be looking at this as we go through it. But it's basically teaching you how to be with your mind, how to be with your desires, you know. For a mumukshu, right? If you're a mumukshu, means one who desires liberation, wants to gain nishta in this knowledge. That's what mumukshu means. A mumukshu is somebody who's recognized the problem and becomes a jignasu, means one who wants knowledge. So once that has become your primary pursuit, right, your primary pursuit is knowledge, then how to be with this mind to help it to settle down, to help it to mature, to be with it with an attitude to let it work in the world and become engaged in the world with an attitude that allows it to have peace without trying to stop it from growing or learning from the world. What is the attitude? And so the whole Bhagavad Gita is like a dialogue. It says, Sankhya Yoga, what is the knowledge? Who are you? And how can I gain a mind that can really hold this knowledge? Right? So these two things are dealt with thoroughly. Sometimes, I remember Swamiji once used an example of a person who had come to a student might come to class who did not yet have that antakarana shuddhi or karma yoga attitude. Right? It's like, he used the example, it's like giving this knowledge, you know, handing this knowledge over to somebody whose container was made of paper, like the fire of knowledge, putting the coals, the burning embers of knowledge, right, into a paper bag. you're holding it in a paper bag, it'll just burn right through it. It's not going to work, right? And so the understanding of how to be with your mind is so important, you know, because if you have that, then when this, as this knowledge takes place, what is given to you because of the peace, the relative peace that you get from being able to be with your mind in a certain way, properly, a karma yoga attitude, that becomes natural. That attitude becomes natural, right? Because you know yourself as the source of ananda. So let's see what he says here. So he says, in fact, Shankara says in his Bhasha, says this, Krishna now is exciting Arjuna, you know. to make him excited about this karma yoga attitude that he's going to be teaching. So that's why he says, you know, hey Partha, if you do this, if you engage in your karma with this buddhi, with this knowledge, this bondage of karma, this confusion around karma, the problems that it causes, you won't have that. It'll be gone. So then he says, Neha bikrama nashas nashasti. Neha bikrama nashasti. Pratyavayo na vidyate. Pratyavayo na vidyate. Swapam apyasya dharmasya. Swapam apyasya dharmasya. Trayate mahato payat. Trayate mahato payat. Na iha. Abhikrama nashaha asti pratyavayaha na vidyate swalpam api asya dharmasya trayate mahato bhayat. He says, talking again about this karma yoga attitude that he's preparing Arjuna to hear, he says, not here, na iha, not here in reference to this attitude, abhikrama nashaha asti. There is no nasha, na asti nasha. There is no nasha of, there is no destruction of any beginning or any pursuit. In other words, you are not going to fail. In Shankara, Shankara uses the example here. Just like, say, for instance, if you're a farmer in agriculture, you're planting all your crops, you've done so much work, you know, and then no rains come. And so even though so much work that you've done, you fail. Because all of the situation, all of the things that you needed for success didn't take place, you know. Say you opened a business and no customers came. You know, one of our good friends, Paul Mordell, who's one of the student, kind of a colleague student. When we were up in Garberville, at the course, Paul decided, this is when, in 1980, he decided he wanted to open a little shop in the middle of Garberville to sell satellite dishes. Okay, now this is 1982. Satellite dishes were just starting to hit the market, barely. And in Garberville, you know, that was kind of far away from stations, you know, and so people didn't really get many channels. So Paul thought, you know, let me start a little business. And so he got this kind of little kiosk, and he started a shop to sell these satellite dishes. And nobody came. I think he got one customer. You know? He was so excited. We all thought it was a great idea. You know? Nobody came to that shop. He just sat there and sat there, and he finally just said, this isn't working. He can't close it. Okay. So, in this situation with karma yoga, that's not going to happen. Right? Whatever your pursuit, there's not, in terms of karma yoga, karma done with this attitude, there is not going to be any failure, any destruction of your of what you are trying to accomplish. So not here, not in reference to this. Abhikrama nashaha, see, there's no destruction of what you're starting. Pratyavayaha navidyate, nor will you get an opposite result. Pratyavaya means a couple of things. Pratyavaya is, okay, you intend to get one result, and you get the opposite, right? You intend to make a lot of money, you end up losing a lot of money, the stock market. You're certain that if you just made this, put this money in this particular stock, you know, you would probably make 15-20% a year. It would be a great investment. So you put the money in the stock, but what happens is you lose all of your money. You lose 15 or 20% a year. Yeah. So it goes bust on you. That's pratyavaya. Another meaning of pratyavaya is that a dharma, you incur sin, you incur papa. Yeah. But probably the better, it doesn't means it becomes like an omission or a wrong thing, done a wrong thing. Here, there's not going to be any pratyavaya. You're not going to have an opposite result, and you're not going to be doing something wrong, and your pursuits are not going to fail. So that's not possible here. So then he says, swalpam api asya dharmasya. Swalpam api, even a little. Swalpam means a little. Api, even. Swalpam api, even a little. Asya, of this. Dharmasya. Even a little of this dharma. Now the karma yoga is being called dharma because it's an attitude, right? So even a little of this dharma, a little of this quality, a little of this way of thinking, trayate mahato bhayat, it protects you. Trayate, even a little bit of this understanding, trayate, it protects you, mahato bhayat, from great fear. Mahataha is in the fifth case, bhayat, from great fear. So, trayate, this dharma, this adhikarma yoga attitude, even a little bit of it, trayate protects you from great fear. Okay. Okay, I'll just say a few minutes beyond this and then we'll stop. The verses that are coming are related to this, but it goes kind of like this. For a person who's a mumukshu, who's seeking self-knowledge, that is what you're seeking. You are seeking moksha. You know. And so, in fact, everything that you're doing is really for that end. Right? And so, what that means, in terms of your world, the world becomes a sadhana. So everything that you're engaged in, right, it's not about success or failure. It's not about pleasure or pain. It's not about acquisition or getting rid of anything. It's about your attitude. It's about whether or not you can engage in the world in a way that allows you to be free, right? In a way that allows the mind to have peace. That's what it's about. When that's the case, no matter what the situation, okay, and there's another aspect of this. There's also the reality that, which as a mumukshu you've already realized, that in terms of this creation, everything is subject to change and everything is subject to death. So there's nothing stable here. But you're not responding to the world as though it has to be stable. Right? There is only one thing that's stable in this creation, and that's the Atma. That's not even an object in the creation. So what is stable is your being. And that is completely stable. Right? And so what is karma yoga? Is simply developing a mind that allows you to engage in the world in a way that is not asking the world to be different than what it actually is. Right? And I'm engaging in the world with that attitude, right? With that attitude, so that my mind can own up the knowledge that I'm gaining. And that's the karma yoga. I'm engaging in the world with an attitude that will allow my mind to have the shanti, to gain the knowledge, to gain nishta in the knowledge of who I am. And when that becomes my pursuit, then I'm released from this karma bandha of having to have this in order to be happy. That is a great fear. You have to remember that what happens is when a person starts gaining knowledge, you forget what it means not to have knowledge. The reality, like, it's like this. If you're walking along and you mistake a rope for a snake, you haven't seen the rope, right? You mistake the rope for a snake. The reality is the snake. You don't know about the rope, right? And so that response is completely real. Before you gain knowledge, that I need this to be happy, or I need to become this, or this must occur, or my life will be spoiled, all of that is real. All of that is as real as the snake. When you start gaining knowledge, even though your mind will go on behaving as though the snake were there, as though I need this to be happy, the mind goes on behaving in that way just because of habit, you know something else. You may be frustrated and say, why does my mind act like this? And why is my mind, you know, so unhappy or still reacting around these things? So you can be mad at your mind and have all kinds of things going on. But you have all of that going on in light of what you know, right? That is a whole different ballgame than having that frustration going on without that knowledge. Right? So now the thing is that for the person, once a person has knowledge, how to help that mind, how to be with that mind in the creation, to be with it in such a way, you know, that you're providing an optimal environment for it to grow and mature. That's what it is. Just if you think, like if you have a child, just think about what every parent is trying to do, every good parent is trying to do, is to provide, you know, the best environment for their child to really grow, to grow up, to be healthy, to be happy. That's what it's all about. And so now here, you're gaining knowledge. Knowledge changes everything. You know, every the way the mind relates, it changes everything. But that everything is a lot. And so the whole orientation to the world doesn't just change overnight, right? In spite of your knowledge. But the difference is that you, with your knowledge, are there holding that mind that is, you know, habitually behaving as though it's ignorance. But it's habitually behaving as though it's ignorant in light of your knowledge, right? And so now what you have to know, what you have to learn, is how best to be with that mind that is learning and maturing to help it along and to relieve the stress, to have an attitude that will allow it to engage in the world and at the same time relieve of the tension and the stress, so that it has a relative shanti until that shanti becomes an absolute shanti. You need the relative shanti in order to gain the absolute shanti. Because without the relative shanti, the mind's not in a condition to be able to gain the absolute shanti. Also, certain things are just natural. It's like if your body is in pain, right? That pain draws your attention. Right? What are you going to do? Say you have a big cut on your leg or something. It hurts like anything. It's drawing your attention. What are you going to do? Oh, for Christ's sake. You don't. We do it properly with our body. You know, if you're hurt, if your body is hurt, it draws your attention and you go to try to fix it. To do what is necessary to heal it. And now, you know, you're not going to attack it, hopefully. You'll do what is necessary to heal it. Now, there is some sophistication. The one who knows best how to heal it will get the best result. Right? That's important. Okay, so now, your mind. You gain knowledge, and you realize the tremendous burden your mind has, the burden of ignorance the mind has had to carry, that you have a jiva has had to carry. It's a huge burden, you know, of responding to everything in the opposite of what it actually is, and taking yourself to be a finite, limited being who is subject to death and whose wholeness is outside. It's a frightening, terrible burden that we've been carrying lifetime after lifetime after lifetime. And so now, because of huge punya, as the tradition, you know, you're at the end of that, the end of that burden. But now the mind gains knowledge, and how to be with the mind now, to let it grow, let it to grow up and mature. It's almost like being given a new mind in a way, right? Now to how to help it to grow and mature, you know, in the light of this knowledge. That's the karma yoga. And that's why Krishna will say, you know, it's better. It's better to stay in the world, you know, and use this as your sounding board so that you can be in the world and not lose your equipoise. Swamiji even once said, that talking about the ashram, because there's a great value for being able to go to the ashram and stay there for 2 or 3 years and just study. That's a positive. I mean, it's a wonderful opportunity to do that. He's always acknowledged that. But he said at the same time, you know, at the same time, the ashram in a way works against you, you know, because it takes you out of your environment. So you don't want to stay there for too long. You want to get your knowledge and go. And if you stay there act too long, then you become like a domesticated cat. You know? Because then you're just being kind of taken care of by the ashram, and you don't have a self. You know, you're supposed to be kind of the center of your situation and making decisions, and you know, it's your life. If you're in an institution, then that institution, you're not the center of the institution. Either the guru is the center of it, or some figure is the center of it, and you're off there on the side. So there's no room for you as a person. And then everything is taken care of. You have all your meals and everything, and you're told what to do and all of that. You become like a domesticated cat. I'm sure, you know, everything has its positive side, but I'm just saying that's something that was said. He said, what's best? But he thought that during this conversation, we could have other conversations too, right? And highlight other things. You know, it's best to come and go. And that's in Rishikesh, it was like that for several years, in fact, where Swamiji had his little kutir, you know, and the sadhus, sannyasis, and students were not living there. They would come when the sun came up in the morning. They'd come into class. Swamiji would sit out in satsang. They'd go do their thing, take care of themselves, come back, you know, when the sun started to set, and have class, and then sit out at satsang at the night, and then they would go. Everybody come and go, take care of themselves, and they have a relationship with their teacher one-on-one. You know, it's not everybody has to follow the same set of rules because they're all living in the institution. It's all you are, your person. You come to class and you leave, and you relate to the your teacher on a one-to-one level, and that's it. There's nothing more to it. That's the best. The best. Especially as you, when you start to understand, this is the sadhana. You're never away from it. The universe is your sadhana. It forces you. It forces you to grow. And the more you know in terms of knowledge, the more conscious you are of the universe forcing you to recognize the truth of what you know. You know, it just holds it like a mirror. It holds it up to you all of the time. Mm-hmm. But that's a good thing, right? Because that's what you want, is for your mind really to try to make the universe be what it isn't. That's not what we want. You know, we want to be able to, that actually the buddhi, your buddhi, even though it's limited compared to Ishwara's, there shouldn't be any difference in the knowledge there. It's not that you become omniscient, but what Ishwara is, right, is how you are. Do you see what I mean? Here's this creation, and you're a jiva in it. Body, mind, sense organs in this whole creation. The truth of this whole creation in which you are is yourself. This creation is a manifestation of your being, right? And this body, mind, sense organs is part of that manifestation, part of that infinite knowledge. And so now, how does this body, mind, sense organs fit in psychologically in this little mind? How does it deal with itself as part of this infinite manifestation? Is it in harmony with the infinite manifestation? Or is it looking around and saying, you know, how is it? Is it in harmony with it or not? You know? And so for Jivan Mukta, I'd say there's an harmony there. Because the Jivan Mukta, the one who's liberated, isn't asking Ishwara to be different. And so then is kind of appreciating the whole. But I can appreciate, a person can appreciate the whole if you're happy. If you are whole, you can say, oh, this is, Bhagavan is amazing. If you're happy, and you are happy, that is your nature, the wholeness is your very nature. But if the mind is still going out to become happy, then you're subject to great fear. It's perilous out there. Because the universe isn't your projection as a jiva. It's not a projection of the jiva. It's not Swargaloka. So the universe isn't going to do what you want. Right? A great percentage of the time. Right? So there's a slowly coming into harmony with the way things are. And that harmony is directly proportional to the mind's recognition of my being and my being as the source of its ananda. See that? Because otherwise, it's not, you can't, the mind can't accept and shouldn't accept, I'm happy being miserable. It's not happy being miserable. Right? And so as long as it, to whatever degree it believes that I need this in order to be happy, you know, it's going to have that tension. But to the degree that it doesn't believe that, to the degree that it rests in the self, to that degree then it's free to enjoy Ishwara. And there's the karma yoga is going to give us an in-between state of relative peace that then eventually blossoms into that whole understanding as the mind relaxes in the light of your knowledge. That's what sometimes we call it emotional lag time. An emotional lag time, you know, that allows the mind has to catches up with what you know, with what the buddhi knows. Okay, let's stop there.
Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Meditation is good for helping to establish that pattern in the mind of recognizing that the self is a source of happiness and peace.
You know, Nididhyasana, right, when you say meditation, you mean Nididhyasana. That's what it's so good, it is so helpful for breaking down that Dehatma Buddhi. When the ahankara, the I notion, is always comes up and lands on the body, because the mind is not used to just recognizing me as me, right? That Hridaya Granthi, that knot of the heart, you know, where the ahankara comes up and it actually is properly labeling me, but then it hooks up with the body. And so when you do Nididhyasana, what you're doing is letting the mind sit with yourself as you. Getting it, the mind gets to know you in and of your own right. So that's one thing. And the other thing is, when you do the Nididhyasana, and say, to get to that state of Nididhyasana, you have to do some preparation like japa or pranayama, talking nicely to the mind to get the mind quiet so it can have that space of absorption where I could say something like a sangoham or something that would make my mind just sit with me. Right? You also recognize not only you recognize your being, but you recognize the ananda of your being, the wholeness of your being, how complete that me is. You know? But Nididhyasana also entails, for a person to do Nididhyasana, it needs to be taught properly, so the person isn't, the main focus isn't on an experience in the mind, but is on the recognition of the constant me that is there no matter what the experience of the mind is. So the self-evident nature of myself, rather than a bliss experience in the mind. And that's where people have gotten into trouble with meditation, because even though the bliss experience of the mind can be nice, that's not what it is. Right? So there's nothing wrong as a byproduct to have a bliss experience in the mind. But if you think the bliss experience in the mind is the self, then that's very misleading. And then we want to have the bliss experience last longer so I can be with myself longer. The whole thing is lost then, you know. In fact, they say, you know, as one of the main obstacles, there's a few obstacles to meditation. One is that when you're meditating, you might fall asleep. That's one. That's a natural obstacle, because you're making your mind quiet and you're kind of, in a way, simulating sleep. That's why they say don't meditate when you're lying down, and that's the only reason. It's not that there's something wrong with that, but it will make you think of sleep, and you could fall asleep that way. Okay. So that's one. Another is these kashayas. When you're meditating, thoughts can come up, emotions and feelings can come up that don't have anything to do with the present. Those are unconscious things. So they talk about those, and they all just sit, you know, and be present to them and let them come and go. We do a little bit more with that because of our knowledge of psychology and whatnot, but they acknowledged all of this kind of unconscious material that will release itself in meditation. They talk about that. The other thing, though, they talk about is the bliss. You know, because when you do meditation, say you're doing japa, and then you do pranayama, the mind can become very blissful because a quiet mind, the more quiet the mind is, the more blissful it is. Right? Again, it's the water bucket. You know, the sun shining in the still water creates a condition in that still water, which is brought about by the reflection of the self in the sattva, in the mind. Right? And so here we are making our mind very, very quiet. And so in that quiet, the mind is becoming blissful, which is very enjoyable. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that. It's not that there's something wrong with that. It's just that I will stop there and think that's it. That this is what I'm achieving. And even the word achieving is not the right word, right? What is meant to be recognized is not this blissful, enjoyable state. That's a byproduct. It's just making the mind quiet so that I can, so that my being can come to the foreground, not in competition with all of the riffraff thoughts and, you know, agitated thoughts or all of the different kinds of vrittis. And so you want to get to know the self, yourself, that is actually here right now. So here we are sitting here with our eyes open and talking and dialoguing. All of this is going on now. So there's all this activity. But I am as much here right now as I am when I'm doing Nididhyasana. But now you do Nididhyasana, and now instead of all of this activity in the way, bliss is in the way as a distraction. So what you need to recognize is the you that is here right now, that is here when you're in with a quiet mind or in a bliss mind, a mind that's full of bliss or expansive mind. To recognize that, get to know that one that is never not here, that is never not fully experientially present, self-evident. And so when the Nididhyasana is being properly directed, it's very powerful. Because then your mind just gets used to you as you are, and it doesn't really matter what the thoughts are or the feelings or the moods or the perceptions. You're always here in exactly the same way. And you also recognize when you kind of remove all of the distractions, you also recognize the beauty of your being. You know, how whole and complete you are. And nothing can ever change that. No vritti, no emotion, nothing can change it. And the nice thing about that is if your mind gets thrown off, you're still there. That hasn't been covered. You're still as much there. Your mind's thrown off in some kind of pain or emotion or something. But you're still there. And so the mind can bring itself back because you're still there. Right? So Nididhyasana is very, very useful for giving the mind a chance to get to know you as you are. Competes with the thousands of lifetimes. Of being totally out here.
Right. So if you're successful in doing it and not distracted by the bliss, but you actually are successful in getting to know yourself, the constant one that is mm-hmm. the source of Ananda, mm-hmm. then that's helpful in this process of retraining the mind. And
very helpful.
If you're not meditating, that you can go back to that as the source of peace that's there.
Yeah, and but also what happens is that you recognize that even now right here that you're completely present. The one that you know in Nididhyasana is the one who is here right now. There's no difference. You know, but you've given yourself a chance to for the mind to really get to know that, because it's so used to that red hot iron ball association, you know, where I am the body, you're one, I am the thought, I'm one. You're so used to that. The knowledge comes along and you see yourself, but then it covers over again. So Nididhyasana is kind of slows down everything so that you can sit with your knowledge. So you're actually just giving your mind some time to slow down everything and sit with what you've actually recognized at the time of teaching. And that's an important thing to do. That's why Shravana, Manana, Nididhyasana. Shravana is the unfolding, it's the scene of that vision. Manana is the logic that goes along with that scene, so that you see it and then you understand why that is true and why it can't be any other way. Right? It provides the context. You see it, but then you have to seeing. If we use this word drishti, you know, if you have a vision, you see it. When we use that word, it means that you know. You see something, it means you get it. You know, you understand. And so that there's, your mind is going to have questions and say, well, yeah, but couldn't it be like this? Couldn't this situation cause that experience? Or, you know, couldn't my brain be creating consciousness? Or I have all kinds of thoughts, and everybody has their own set of doubts. Those doubts need to be answered so that you understand, that you really do understand what you see. It's in context. And then the shravana, the manana, the nididhyasana. That it's not about the doubts; it's about the recognition. It's about sitting with what you've understood, sitting with yourself, or even sitting with yourself as Ishvara, because you can do different types of nididhyasana. You can sit with yourself, and you can, having brought your mind to yourself, you can say things like, I am the whole. And then that resolves your mind into yourself as Ishvara.